this computer. So hi, what number is this? 91, I think. I don't know. We're closing in on 100. I can't believe we have 100 of these things.
That's crazy.
I want to welcome Jennifer and Kelly and Mary Jo and Peggy and Kelsey and Lindsay and Sean and Judy and Anita and Millie and Kristen.
Just talk about it. We're not going to do the
name. I can cut all this out.
Okay.
Kim and Kimmy and Hannah and Emily. I was wondering what that look was for.
Well, I'm like, we just talked about this.
Emily and Don and Karen and Joe and Phil and Sarah and Diane and anybody else who shows up late. So it's Memorial Day weekend. It's Friday. It's 12:05. We're 5 minutes late.
Happy Friday.
I'm out of accountability. Sorry about that, everybody. What we decided to do is we're going to use this Zen Talk for next week's podcast. So it's just kind of a, what's it called?
A podcast?
No, not a podcast, but a warning. What's the word? There's another word. Just kind of a precursor, whatever. There's a word that I can't think of that word that I want to use.
Heads up.
A heads up. So, and honestly, the reason is because we're leaving town. A disclaimer. Thank you, Cogbear.
Disclaimer. Thank you, Peggy. We need the educators on here.
So if you want, so here's the deal. If you ask a question.
Finish your sentence. We're going to be out of town. We're going to be out of town.
So we're not, we're not going to be back until Tuesday. And we do our podcast on Tuesday. So if you ask a question and you don't want your name or you want yourself to be removed out of the podcast altogether,
just type it in.
Yeah. Or
we email, won't say your name.
Email me or cut or tell me and I can cut you out of the podcast itself. That's what I'm saying. So this is a place for Team Zen. So I don't want to minimize or short everybody who's on the team if they have a question.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So yeah, just because we're trying to, and selfishly it does two things. One is we don't have to record a second podcast. And secondly, I kind of want more people to join Team Zen because I love this community and I think that we do good work because of what you guys bring and what we bring. We all bring. We're all in this together, right? Let me take a breath.
I know, chill out, man. Relax.
I woke up and
Todd's like, ee!
I know. My brain's buzzing.
Why don't you take a deep breath? All right.
That helped.
All right.
So we do have a question that somebody typed onto Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and then you wanted to maybe add some other things.
So why don't I start with what we're going to start with just to kind of kick everything off, then we'll do the question and then see if everybody else has questions.
Did you just say, I want to start with what we want to start with? Seems like that's what you said.
Okay. So I'm just going to, did you want to do any formal things as we start since this is a podcast?
I will as soon as I tell JC to stop doing the dishes. Usually that's a good thing, but we're recording a Zen Talk right now. Hey, Bird.
Yes, sir.
Can you be as quiet as you can? Because we're not only recording a Zen Talk, we're recording a Zen Parenting Radio podcast.
I know. We're having a hard time getting going. I know. We're not. Okay. Bye, honey. Thank you. Right. JC's like, you have a slow start there. I'm like, I know. She's judging us.
So let's pretend this is a podcast right now. Hi, my name's Todd. I know. How do I start the podcast?
I don't know.
Do. I need to do that song jingle.
Do.
Hi, my name's Todd.
This is Kathy.
Welcome back to another episode of Zen Parenting Radio. This is a podcast where we talk. This is I'm totally out of my element. This is a podcast.
I'm like sweating.
We're usually downstairs with microphones and headgear on. It's all messed up.
Okay. Nobody cares. They came here for help and we're messing up.
Well, you know what? Let's just love ourselves when we mess up.
Okay. So let's start again.
Just remember. Okay. Do. this is podcast number 400 and something.
Okay.
It's a podcast where we talk about, I don't know how I start.
Okay, let's just start. Okay, so everybody, this is what I wanted to start with today. For some of us, I don't know how many of you, but like our girls finished school yesterday or kind of today because one of my daughters has a meeting today with her biology class. So my girls are finishing up with school this year. Now, I don't have a child who's graduating from preschool, elementary school, middle school, or high school. Luckily, I have a junior, a freshman, and a sixth grader. But even with that said, they need some kind of ritual experience, a shift in gears to help them celebrate a year that they did complete and to shift into a summer. It seems weird because nothing may change in their day-to-day experience. And at the same time, a lot of things are changing in every state right now, as far as expectations, openings, slow openings or no openings at all, whatever it may be, but we're all kind of in this flux. And that's why ritual can be really important, is it helps us ground in a moment. It allows us to feel, you know, to stop for a second and say, even in the midst of all of this, we did complete something. This is an end, a congratulations, a good luck moving forward, whatever it may be. I know I've seen on social networking, some people who are graduating from school, college, high school, middle school, are putting on their robes and taking pictures and getting balloons. And there are some virtual graduations, which I think is lovely. But I think even in our own homes, instead of just moving right through it and being like, yep, on to the next thing, we really need to stop for the sake of ourselves and for our kids and do something to acknowledge. And even for our preschoolers, even for the littles, even for, you know, just to say, you completed a year, you did a good thing, and it looked different and felt different. But I think that'll help us transition into this next phase with a little more sense of clarity, because everything has been so blurry. All these lines have been blurred. We don't know, you know, where we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to be doing. Again, uncertainty, we're all living in it. So I'm kind of figuring that out for myself. Like, part of the reason that, you know, Todd said, we're going to go to Galena for the weekend. Thanks to my aunt here, is because we need to have a shift in gears, and we're not going to be with other people or anything. It's just us again going to another house. But we need to have some kind of transition, and you don't need to leave your house to do that. But that was one thing we figured out we could do. So even if it's just having a special dinner, even if it's just having a conversation, this is my recommendation for us as parents, and also to support our kids and them achieving something in the midst of a lot of craziness.
Well, and I would say, I used to be anti-ritual, probably from some baggage of going to church when I was a little kid. So I would be exposed to ritual all the time, and I didn't see the use, and I thought it was boring and dull. And I feel like ritual doesn't have to be like this religious spiritual experience.
No.
It's just something different than the day to day.
Right.
And we have been experiencing day to day since COVID showed up in our lives in middle of March. And now we're getting towards the end of May. So I feel like what you're saying, sweetie, is do something to change the mojo of, and you know, some people still have school for another
right
month.
That's why I know this isn't applicable to everybody. I know even the Chicago public schools still have a couple weeks or a month. It's basically just, you know, Todd just said the definition or meaning of ritual, a ceremony consisting of a series of actions in a certain order. It doesn't have to be that way. Just use the ceremony idea, the idea of that. It's to me, let me just say this instead of like trying to go off of a dictionary definition. Ritual is some way that we acknowledge a passing of time or a moment in time or an accomplishment or closure or starting a new chapter, whatever it may be. But I think when right now, because things are so not typical, not normal, we have to create them ourselves, because the world is not, you know, we're not having real live graduations, or at least we're not in Illinois. We're not having that natural transition of like, you know, going to a party tonight on the last day of school and then celebrating graduates. Like, we're missing all of those milestones that would have normally felt ritualistic. Like, okay, I'm feeling the transition. So we have to create them. And I know it sounds like, ooh, another thing I have to do. It doesn't have to be big. It's just the acknowledgement. That's like the girls yesterday, they're so used to it in our house. You know, they finish classes, they're like, aren't we going to have a special dinner?
Yeah.
Aren't we going to do something special?
Like, Skylar just came downstairs when we were in your office yesterday. She's like, well, I guess I'm done with sixth grade.
Yeah. She's like, what do I do with this?
And then it's like thud, like there's nothing else there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even know why it seems important, but I feel like it's something.
Well, you do. I mean, it's to acknowledge passing of time.
Yeah.
Because part of the reasons our lives feel so fast is because we just keep going.
Speaking of time.
Uh-huh.
I can't speak for everybody because I know that there's like healthcare workers that have been busier than ever. But for me,
all sorts of essential workers.
Yeah, essential workers. Thank you. For me, my life has slowed down quite substantially. Mm-hmm. And it seems like middle of March was like 18 months ago.
I know.
In a way, like, I actually look at it as a good thing because before COVID, I'm always like, God, time just moves so fast. And the older we get, the faster it is. Mm-hmm. This is really forced me to be, I guess, more present without even deciding to. Mm-hmm. Does it seem like March was a long time ago?
It does.
And if there was no COVID, I know that March would have been like yesterday.
Right. Well, and I think the reason that we, you know, I know neurobiologically, the reason we remember certain times and periods is because of the emotional element attached to something.
True.
It's why we remember traumas so vividly. It's why we remember graduations or proms, because there's like a lot of emotion around it. A lot of, you know, we feel that transition because there's all these milestones as we go from zero to through college. After that, it kind of starts to blend. But I think right now what you're saying is that because there's been so much emotion and uncertainty tied to this time, it's going to be ingrained in our brain, just like 9/11 is ingrained in our brain, just like any kind of
NASA when the space shuttle exploded.
Yes,
everybody remembers that, and it's just because we attached emotion to it.
We were kids, and also this is a different one because this goes on. You know, this is not a one day experience. This goes on, and it's ever changing, and we're all trying to manage it in our own homes, in our own towns, in our own states. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of overriding, what am I trying to say? We're not quite sure who we should be listening to kind of experience. So we're all kind of having to manage, carry a load. And I think I said this last week on Team Zen, but, or maybe I said it on Zen Parenting, I don't remember, but can we at least visualize that we're not alone carrying it? That all of us here on this, in this team, we're all carrying this kind of emotional load together. We're not alone. It's part of the reason I love to take walks, because I see people, like right now there's kids outside my window riding bikes, and I remember that I'm not alone in this environment. There's other people having a similar experience, and can we, even if we can't be in proximity with a group of other people, can we remember that it's not just on our shoulders and that we're all doing this together separately, as we say so often.
So I know that there is somebody that wants to ask a question, but first I wanted to address the question that we got on Facebook, and I'm going to read it verbatim. I would like advice and resources on how to navigate nudity and self-exploration touching in young children. My kids are almost 5, 2, and 2. They are naked, bottomless, almost constantly, which is fine with me since we are just home. Everyone changes, showers, uses the toilet in front of each other in our home. Not a specific choice, but the reality with 3 young kids. How or when did you set the boundaries? How and did you set limits around self-touching? I don't want to create any shame. To date, we have been more matter of fact. Please don't touch your vagina when we are watching the movie. Don't put your hand on your bottom while you nurse. And I think that was the end of the question.
Okay.
So I'm sure you have some thoughts. So let me start.
Okay.
I remember that we dealt with this regarding touching yourself. The position that Kathy and I felt that that's a very natural, normal thing that kids do. And when there is some social issues with that, like let's say you're having a big party and then a kid has his hands down his pants, like, you know, I would just say, you know what, if you want to do that, you need to go up into your room to, you know, continue to.
It's just a private experience.
It's a private, yeah, that's something that's private and you do that. So for me, I think it's very important to make sure that there's no shame around it. And it sounds like the woman that asked this question wants to make sure that she continues to do that. And I think she's doing a good job. Unless you've thought about it, it's kind of an awkward thing to say, okay, how am I going to position myself when this happens? So I guess the most important thing that I would say is just make sure that, hey, that's a private experience. And if you want to do that, go do it in private. Mm-hmm. There's probably a lot of nuances like, okay, well, what if it's just me and mom? Do I want to remove myself from that? And I think that'd just be a personal decision.
Well, and I think the way I read the question, and there was some follow-up on the Facebook page, you know, when we were discussing it, is it's a little about the boundaries in the home, but I think that there, from what she said, there was also other people commenting on the boundaries. And that's where things get messy, when other people's advice or their own discomfort or the way they raise their kids starts getting involved in our environment. Because what I told her in a nutshell was that, first of all, this kind of experience is a day-to-day experience. You don't have to be like, when they turn three, this will be the new boundary. Like, it's not age specific. It is about being with your present with your children every day and recognizing what's happening in that moment and what's appropriate in that moment, rather than this big umbrella of this is appropriate at this age, this is appropriate at this age, because that's just like saying a kid should be walking by 1 year old, and if they're not, something's wrong with them. That there's no truth to that. You've got to address it in the moment with kids. The thing that I said to her is that our bodies are our bodies, and we should be figuring out our bodies. And figuring out our bodies is not always sexual in nature. And I think that's this discomfort that we get is, yeah, you know, touching can feel good, and there's some, you know, normalization of that, of a child understanding their body, but they're all just, they're also just trying to figure out how it all pieces together, you know, where this comes out and what, and it's not, we look at everything regarding the body as sexual and inappropriate. And that's got to be our first question, is really, what do I want my kid to understand? And the thing that I always wanted my kids to understand is your body is your body, and you should understand how it works. And you should, like, you know, the shame around touching, a lot of that was imposed on us, if it be from our family of origin or religion. And when you can really step, and again, I'm saying something that sounds easier said than done, but when you can step back from it a little bit and be like, well, what do we want our kids to know? We want them to know their body for their own sense of health, for their own autonomy, so they understand how it works, and also for down the road, if they are in partnership, that they understand how their body works, that they understand what feels good to them. I know that's later on down the road, but this is really what we want, correct? So when other people start imposing things like, oh, your kids still take a bath together, well, that's not appropriate. You have to remember that that's their experience and their input or their shame or whatever it may be. And if it matches up with yours, that's great. But if you feel that things have been going on in your home and it's felt fine to you, I would, it fine, appropriate, whatever it may be, you may want to consider saying, thank you very much, I appreciate that input, but, you know, we're feeling okay about this now. Now, as far as setting boundaries, again, I think it's a moment-to-moment experience. I think that saying to a kid, you know, it's all about tone too. Like, it's totally fine if you know your body and touch your body, but that is something you do in private. And so you start by saying, this isn't a problem, because sometimes when we're like, just do that in private, it's almost like we're afraid of it. And instead it's like, I totally understand what you're doing, but there's also something to learn with this, that this is something you do in your own space.
Well, and as we say on pretty much any question we ever answer, is it's not what you say, it's
from how you say it.
It's from what energy are you saying it from? So the words are important, but for me, what's more important is how you're saying it. So check in with yourself when you're going to, you know, guide these toddlers about touching their body. It's, you know, you could be saying the right thing, but saying it in the other way, or you could be using the wrong words, but as long as you come at it with that energy, yeah, that's kind of a bigger deal.
It's kind of like this in, you know, having naked babies running around. That's pretty typical. And I'm saying babies, like little ones, you know, that's what they do. They're not being, and again, for us to perceive that as sexual, it's not. They're just being themselves. And we, and as far like, because her question is, yeah, but what are the boundaries, Kathy? The thing that I explained to her was that some of those boundaries get set so naturally, you know, obviously the conversations that we have, you know, with them about privacy, but also as they grow, as they are around other kids, as they experience their own brain development, they start to set their own boundaries. Like, wait until the day when your kid goes in the bathroom and starts shutting the door. Mm-hmm. And you're like, when did that start happening? Like, that wasn't something that happened before. Or when they say, no, I can do it myself. Or when they start changing in a closet, you know, whatever it may be, it happens very gradually and naturally. And that's why I said to her, and I actually don't know if I wrote this, but I'll say it now, be present with what's happening now rather than worried about what will this look like later, because there's a natural progression and you will, these are gut instinct things. These are not book things. You're not going to read a book and find the perfect, you know, year.
Yeah. And we've said on the show many times, it's not our quote, I don't know whose quote it is, but neurons that fire together, wire together. And in our society,
Dan Siegel, honey.
Are you sure it's him? I think it might be somebody.
Well,
I think
he writes it. About it.
Right.
I'm not saying that it's his, but he writes about it.
I think he got it from somebody else. But in our Western culture, there's so much shame built around sex and sexuality. Mm-hmm. So I would just like be very hyper conscious of that. And because it's almost like the default is that there's going to be shame because of, you know, outside factors. So if in your own household, you can manage to create a nice, safe, loving, warm, open environment.
And communication.
Communication style, sex and sexuality, you're going to be way ahead of what most kids are experiencing.
And remember, it's part of their humanity. It's something they need to understand, not just their sexuality, but their bodies. It's part of being human. There's nothing wrong with it in that inherent, you know, nature. And that you know, like, it's sexuality is everywhere, and we seem to be fine with it in inappropriate ways sometimes on billboards or, you know, TV shows, and we're like, yeah, that's just normal. But we then have such a hard time talking about the inherent nature of it in our own homes. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I would say is what it always starts with is us. What were we taught, and what can we, the shame that we were taught, can we start to question that, release some of that, acknowledge some of that? Because if we don't, that's the tone behind our words. We're afraid. We're afraid. And so the way that we talk to them is from that fear state. And it's, I'm not saying you're going to clean that whole, you know, because it can be a mess in many of us for, you know, it can be really messy. I'm not saying you're going to clean it up with one self-awareness, but being conscious of even having that conversation with your partner or a friend or a therapist, like, what was I taught and how is that showing up? And why, and what am I worried about other people thinking about what I'm doing, or what does that mean when somebody gives me input about what my kids shouldn't, you know, there's a lot of self-awareness that plays into what we want to teach our kids, how we want to say it. Can you imagine that, Todd? There's self-awareness in this.
Yeah.
Isn't that shocking information?
I was going to say something else, but I forgot what it was. So we're going to bring in Joe because Joe has a question. Hi, Joe.
He's still
there. Hey.
Hi, Joe.
Hey.
What's up?
Hi. So one thing I've been dealing with recently is my son is usually very kind and thoughtful and responds to things, at least with like some form of thoughtfulness. But lately, at least in the last couple of weeks, he's been really angry. Mm. And
how old is he?
He's seven and a half. And we talk a lot about, you know, I really try to work with him on his feelings about, what are you feeling? It's okay to feel angry. You know, here's how we deal with it. But lately it's been really hard to have that conversation with him because he's going right to slamming doors, running by me, hitting me, hiding his screens. Just been like a lot of like really negative, kind of like acting out his anger in ways that I'm not used them to. Like, he's done that some over the years and we talk about it and then we manage. And also, like, as a little bit of a background, we do meditation together. We work on mindfulness. So it's one thing that he's been asking from me, if I'm like, hey bud, it's time to eat lunch, and he won't get off his screen and he starts getting angry and he's gonna maybe throw something or slam the door, he's been starting to like ask me to let him take a deep breath and recenter. Mm-hmm. Which I think is really great, and that's really cool, because that's something we've been working on. But then he still won't do the things that we need to do, and he's still acting out in anger. Like, he's almost using that as like an angry thing and be like, you're not letting me center and take a deep breath. And
What are some of the things that Joe, what are some of the things that he needs to do? What do you mean?
Some of it's around schoolwork, and I know that's frustrating for all kids right now. You need to be, you have to do, for him, he's in second grade, so he has like some small things, like he needs to write 3 sentences for the day. He needs to read 1 story for the day. You know, really little stuff that should really only take him about a half an hour, and he could ideally be done with school by like 11 o'clock. But it's a lot of like me having to like keep on him. And I know it's hard for him. And he's like, this is frustrating for me. You won't leave me alone. You won't do this. And even like around time to eat lunch, it's like, all right, it's time to eat lunch. And it's almost like he's kind of feeling like frustrated and checked out, mm-hmm. and not wanting to work with me, but acting out, not able to like talk about that and work on it, but just really being angry. And it's hard for me because it's not the person that he has ever been or usually is. And it's frustrating.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. I feel like I need some new tools or some like new thought processes on how to handle that right now in this moment at his stage with all the other things we're dealing with right now. So
Joe, this is what I hear you saying. So your son, who's 7.5, has been having some outbursts, and sometimes it's slamming doors. Sometimes he's hitting you, and just very normal outbursts for somebody who's 7.5 years old, and you're getting frustrated and you need new tools. Is that kind of a fair summary of where you just took me?
Yeah. That would be the basis of it. I mean, and I know some of it comes from like my own, like my tools of like, I'm feeling frustrated and I'm being pushy. So there's some of that too. Like, where do I need to like take my own pauses and have my own skills work into that? Like,
yeah,
with navigating day.
Yeah,
just the two of us all day long.
Yeah, I would invite you. I think you just hit the nail on the head. As you know, obviously this has to do with your son, and if he's hitting you, then you need to set up some healthy boundaries around that. But a lot of times us parents are like, okay, how do I fix this problem that my kid is showing to me? And, because I know you, I would just invite you to look at it as a learning experience. It's like, how can I get centered when this happens? Because it's going to happen. He's 7.5 years old. His whole world is turned upside down. He can't see his friends. School sucks. He's e-learning. I mean, all these different things are happening. And can you look at it as an invitation like, oh, this might be as much about me as it is about him? And I know that's kind of like for most, a hard thing to handle. So I'm pushing you a little bit, but it's not, and then the other thing is that this is completely normal. Like, it's a 7.5-year-old man, it's a 7.5-year-old kid. And it seems like you are handling it really well. There's nothing wrong with being angry, because the minute that any parent tells his kid not to be angry, that it just gets pushed down and it'll come out sideways in some other way. So what I would do is get creative, and as best way you can is how to continue to reaffirm that being angry is okay. How you express it is where you need to work together on it. Like, how are some other ways that you can express your anger, 7-year-old son, in a healthy way? Punching a pillow, going for a walk, taking a breath, meditating, praying, drinking a glass of water. You're smart enough where you can get creative in how to do it. And then, just to reaffirm, like, dude, this is completely normal. And, I'm sure every single parent on this call or listening to this podcast has dealt with the exact same thing. And now I'll turn it over to my sweetheart.
So I, 2 things that I thought of as you were talking is that one is that, one thing that kids have lost in this time, and I don't care how old they are, is control. And sometimes loss of control shows up in anger and frustration. Of course, right? Makes sense. That's how it shows up in me. And that the simple things like just the examples that you gave Joe, like I tell him it's time for lunch and he won't eat lunch. What if you set lunch down and you say, dude, lunch is ready whenever you want it? What if you let go of give him the control to decide when he wants to eat rather than he needs to eat right now? Or, like us as adults, we'll say, you have 30 minutes of work. It's not that hard. You could get this done in 30 minutes. But that's us from an adult brain. Like, for a 7-year-old, the work he has to do is hard. But even though we may say, look at it and say it's not, it is for him. Something that Todd and I talked about the other day is that I talked about this on the show, I think. Todd was doing these, he was like kind of winding up with his arms like this, And I was asking him why he was doing that. And he said, because I'm about to go and do push-ups and it's the hardest part. And I got to get really ready to do it. Like mentally, physically, he's got to stretch out. He's like, it's really hard. And I related to him. I said, you know, that's how I feel when I go downstairs to write, is I have to gear up to write. I have to like maybe look at Facebook first or read a poem first, or it's not always that gentle. Sometimes it's, I have to just go through email and you got to gear up to it. And if I had somebody telling me you have to start this now, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm trying. Like I'm getting there. And sometimes even saying to him, you know, homework in between this time and that time. Or, and then if he doesn't do it, you, of course, as a dad, question and say, I'm trying to give you some space and some control to do this on your own time, but you do have to get it done before dinner or before whatever. Because I think as parents, especially if we've had a system that's worked for us, and I'm really specifying for us, we get a little annoyed when that system is not working. We're like,
your expectation is he's going to fall into line.
He's going to do these things. And like you said, his personality has been a certain way and you've been comfortable with that. He's normally followed through with what he's going to do. And now he's not doing that. And the thing that we know as parents is that, like, I always use Richard Rohr's example of parenting is order, disorder, reorder. So right now there's just a little disorder where, like, I would go to Todd's suggestions of now it's time to get creative and figure out to gain reorder again. And then 2 weeks, there's going to be disorder again. And then we reorder. So it's not that there's something inherently wrong with your son necessarily. I mean, of course, if he needs to talk about something, you know, and you want to create time or walks so he can maybe share, you know, I don't know what's going on with him, or, but I know that when we're angry, that lack of control or feeling that we're being controlled drives the anger upward versus stepping back.
And Kelsey said something in the chat box. We're having similar behavior and challenges with our 5.5-year-old. We're trying to remember that under all the anger, he's probably really sad.
Of course.
Missing school, friends, and grandparents. And he's sick of being with just his parents all day, every day.
Yep.
Joe, as loving of a guy as you are, I think I'd get sick of you if I had to live with you for 2.5 months straight. And I'm, you know, I'm obviously poking some fun.
Everybody's getting sick of each other.
And here's the other thing. Sure. Like, can you approach these problems? You know, we just want our kids to fall in the line. At least I do. And if we can figure out a way to approach these problems with some levity and some humor, like for Kathy and I, we use that as much as we can, because the more serious we are, and believe me, there's nuances in here. Like if I'm getting hit by my son, I'm not going to be able to bring levity to it. So I think you need to work on healthy boundaries of things that are not okay. And hitting dad is not one of those things. So I'm going to stop talking and just hear what you have to say, Joe.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the thing is, and I love that. It's all really helpful stuff. I have a lot of tools that I've worked on over the years, and I feel like I've gone through that whole list of my creative tools and set the lunch out, you know, and been like, okay, whenever you're ready, you know, like as long as you get work done by dinner, I don't care. And the thing is, like, he won't eat lunch, and he won't, like, I'll do all my tools, my like fun, playful stuff. And he's just like, dad, get away from me. I'm just going to play my games right now. And, or I'm going to go slam the door and I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So it's, and I think you're right. It's just like that two things that I hear is one, making sure that I'm ready and prepared to have a day like that and know that it's going to be like that. You know, like when I get up in the morning, be like, all right, today's going to be challenging in these ways. And what do I need to do for myself to be ready for that and be in a place that I can handle that and be okay with it? Yeah. And also, you know, just understanding that he is sad. He is upset. He is bored. He is frustrated. And let him find healthy ways to express that, really.
And can you figure out a way to communicate to your son that when this happens and he reacts, that you get sad or scared or angry? Like, we have to model what it is that we want our kids to do. And if you're like either really stoic or you fly off the handle and become reactive, like what type of reaction do you want your son to have when this happens? And that's what you want to try to model. So can you just be honest, saying, you know what, buddy, when you hit me, I get a little scared. I get a little sad. And without like dumping your problems onto him, right. Which is kind of
tricky. It's not for him to carry. It's just to put in the air.
And so, and remind him, like, if that's going to be okay, I just want to share with you that, you know, when you hit me, it really gets me a little sad and I get a little scared because I think that I need to give you a better idea, better options on how to express this anger. So, you know, for me, it always comes to modeling. Like, if you can model what it is that you want your son to be in these reactive times, because I'm sure, you know, he's in reactivity and his reactivity triggers your reactivity, but you're the one who's has a fully developed prefrontal cortex. Can you like step away and go to your tools, which is breath, centering, meditation? In these moments, it's not like you say, you know what, buddy, give me 10 minutes to go meditate. Can you take one conscious breath before you respond to him? And it's a lifelong journey, but it's something we all are capable of.
And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I think that this is true in relationship with anybody, 7-year-olds, our partners, is you do your due diligence from your side. So Joe, like you said, I put out lunch and then he doesn't eat it. Now, what you can say back to him later on is the lunch is uneaten. How are you going to have energy to do anything? And he may say, that's the lightness, is you're not like, you didn't eat your lunch. You're like the lunch, and you're going to keep setting it out every day, but you can't force food into, you know, like we can say, sit down, you have to sit down, but kids usually just figure a way around that.
Well, one example, like, as far as like thinking what For sure. kids are supposed to be doing, we have one of our three kids who stands up at the dinner table to eat. And I could see like 30 years ago, my parents would be like, sit down, you know, sit out. Like, who cares if she stands up? I mean, it's still interesting to me, but like, I don't care. She's going to stand up while she eats at the dinner table. So Kathy talked a little bit about loosening the grip on your expectations. Like, he's not going to eat lunch. Is that really a problem? He might get hungry and he might say, hey, I want a chocolate bar at 3:00. That's when you lovingly and compassionately say,
here's lunch.
You know what, buddy?
I put it out at noon.
You can't have the candy bar. Is it a problem that my daughter likes to stand up while she's eating dinner? Really, it's not. Other than my expectation is we all kind of kumbaya, sit down, hold hands, but that's not what's happening. So can I just be okay with what's happening? So.
Well, and the last thing I'll say is, like, in no way, I think the control piece is the issue, because I think sometimes our feelings as our role as parent get in the way, where we're like, I have to, and when I say check these things off my list, I don't mean that you're multitasking. I mean that we'll be like, I set out lunch, but they didn't eat. So this hasn't, my role as parent hasn't been like, I still need to make them eat, when really you set out the food and you relax. And then, like Todd said, if at 3, he's like, I'm hungry or whatever, say, food's still here. And you could even wrap it up and bring it back out. Not in like a mommy dearest kind of way, like they have to eat that and that's the only thing. But what I mean is, it's like, you keep doing your part and you keep showing up and backing away and allowing him to have some space. And, you know, and again, you're not going to do this perfectly. You know, a bunch of people have written in the chat box, like, it's so tough when you realize you're going to have a hard day. There is no way. We try to like override that disappointment. Like, I'm going to be so prepared to have a hard day that it really won't be hard. And the definition of a hard day is that we're having a hard day. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, we can have some tools, but sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Well, and no matter what tool you do, Joe, odds are it probably isn't going to work. And how are you going to respond?
Well, it might for you, but it may not change his behavior.
Right. Like, if you're doing it to modify his behavior, really, we don't have much control over our kids. And I know a lot of parents would challenge me with that. If we're lucky, we have some influence over it, but we don't really have true control. Like, they can decide certain things. I mean, you can't force food into the kid's mouth. I mean, I guess you can, but
no.
Normal parents would not choose to
normal.
Do that. It
wouldn't be safe.
Kathy's challenging.
I just don't like the way he uses normal.
So it's not going to go according to plan. Even if you have the best tools ever, dude, it's still not going to go according to plan. It's not like your son's going to be like, oh my God, Dad, you're so great. Thank you so much for showing me the way towards Zen. The trick is, when it doesn't go great, how are you going to respond?
Well, and can I switch gears to a question that somebody asked? This is related to Joe's question, but it's a question
somebody else
asked. And
then we're going to go to Melanie because she's been waiting.
Is that someone asked a question about our child being grateful for the things we do, or something to the effect of they were having a tough day and the children didn't seem to understand all the work the mother was doing and all the things that she, you know, the food she puts on the table, the work she's doing, and the kids just expect it. And up until our children are maybe 10, 11, maybe even older, that's exactly how it is. They think you are the person who does those things. They don't say, mom, dad. I mean, maybe, and if they do, maybe they've been taught to, or maybe they're evolved in their thinking. But typically, mom equals gives me food, you know, make sure there's towels for when I take a shower. That's what mom is. So they're not sitting there thinking, wow, mom has a full life and she also takes care of me. That's not the way children think.
They don't care.
They, and not because they're bad people. We're trying to evolve their brain development before it's time. We're trying to be like, I want my five-year-old, and Joe, you're not saying this. This is about everybody. That we are trying to have our little kids be little adults. Mm-hmm. Like, I want a kid who says please and thank you. And they're learning those social graces, but the real, like, being able to have abstract thinking where they understand mom and dad have lives of their own and they're helping me with things and they're, you know, they can't see that till they're older. And I know that that's frustrating and we want them to, and we have every right to feel tired and overwhelmed. It's not, I'm not telling you to not feel that way, but we have to be conscious of not looking to our kids for all this gratitude. Because that's not going to happen.
It's not why you brought them into this world. I mean, it feels good.
And if they say it, take it. You know, be like, you're welcome and enjoy that. But that they're really not, they think of us as that's what we do.
Yeah.
So they don't look at it as separate entities.
It's not supposed to be an equal exchange.
Correct. Well, parenting isn't. I mean, if that hasn't been said to you guys by a million people by now, like, it's not an even, it's not reciprocity. Parenting, we give more. That's just the way it goes. And, you know,
however, as we get older, we find ourselves giving more to our aging parents.
Yeah.
But I mean, things, not as much.
Order, disorder, reorder. Everything is constantly changing. But typically when we have kids 10 and under, that's going to be it. Everything flows to them.
So Joe, I don't know. I know what you wanted was answers. I don't like to give answers, quite honestly. I'd rather just kind of reframe it for you. And have you approach it a little bit differently. And I think if you do that, then the answers will show up. So I don't know. That's my two cents.
Okay.
What were you going to say, sweetie?
Nothing. Just, all right. So thanks, Joe.
We're going to head over to Melanie. Hang on. Here we go. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Mom.
Hi. So my question is very similar to Joe's, but instead of a five-year-old, it's a 13-year-old again. and the dilemma is, and instead of answers, I guess you can reframe it for me, Todd, on how to look at this, but they ended school yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of mixed emotions for me, with summer being, you know, completely a blank slate at this point. But the issue we've been having as of late with our 13-year-old is him going to bed. I haven't been very strict on wake up times. He got all of his learning done. He did, you know, he did very well. He was very independent. Didn't really have to help him with any of that. He got it all done, but he would, you know, wake up around 11:30 and he and his friends pretty much stay up pretty late playing video games. Now he is also getting himself outside. You know, he's not necessarily doing all of his chores, which is like two things, but, I've been a little bit more relaxed about that. But my husband and I do have a concern now that summer is here and there isn't really a schedule for him, that his sleep is just going to be all over the place. And we just don't think that's a healthy thing for him. So I'm not sure, we're not sure how to, so with regards to the video games, basically he's up late after we go to sleep, playing video games with his friends. He doesn't get off until his friends get off. His friends tend to stay on longer than we are comfortable with. We have told him, you know, this is the expectation. We want you to go to bed by this time. You need to turn the alarm on. Mm-hmm. So when he turns the alarm on, we know when he goes to bed. So the last couple of days, he has realized that if he turns the camera to face the wall, he can turn the alarm on at the time he's supposed to go to bed, but then he can go finish doing whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. And so now we're just kind of a little, you know, obviously we don't like that. We don't have an alarm set on the PS4, but we did tell him we're going to allow you to, we're going to give you space to make the right choices or better choices regarding your bedtime and everything. But, you know, if you don't make those, you know, we understand you're younger. It's hard for you to get off when your friends are still on. You don't understand. You know, we've had these conversations. So now we're at a point where we feel like we need to impose, you know, the automatic shut off. So I'm just not sure how to approach this because it's the very beginning of summer break at this point. And, you know, I'm still working. Both my husband and I are healthcare providers. We're still working out of the home. My schedule is all up in the air right now. I've got two younger kids that I sometimes need his help with. If I have to go to work and the dad, my husband isn't home yet. So, and he needs to have a good amount of sleep in order to handle all of these changes that are going on and not seeing his friends as much and all of this stuff. So we're not sure what to do at this point.
Sure. Quick question. Do you have the ability to shut his gaming down without his ability to? Okay. So you have that.
Yeah.
My first two
sets. Done yet.
Yeah, yeah, and I hear that. And it seems like you're doing pretty well. I guess my only pointer would be, I'm sure you've done this, so you might have to do it again, but collaborate with them, saying, hey, buddy, we think that there may be a little balance issue regarding sleep and gaming. So what can we do that works for all of us? And then maybe you find a middle ground between that. And not if, but when he breaks that agreement, then he knows ahead of time, like, okay, it's, you know, say, okay, you could be up till midnight gaming, but then after that, you know, and that's something you guys decide together. And then after that.
And that's where we are. That's where we are right now. So he has broken that agreement. He hasn't, I can't say that he 100% agreed to it.
Okay. So
I
think that's an important point. You need to come up with something where you both agree, the three of you, husband, wife, son, agree to it. And then when, if you have the ability to shut down, say, we agreed to this. And then it's not like that agreement is going to be set in stone for the entire summer. Like, let's try this for a week and see how it works. And because as long as there's buy-in from all three parties, then you are coming up with a solution together versus the typical one, which is parent dictates, son or daughter just decide, you know, has to fall into line. And my invitation, because you said he was 13.
Yes.
Yeah.
My invitation would be to say, hey, we need to kind of figure these things out together because it's going to be a summer of 2.5 months or whatever it is before we get back into the school structure. So let's come up with something that fits for all of us. And then you got to like hold firm on the consequences and then maybe you renegotiate after that. But if you just kind of allow yourself to be taken,
well,
what do you think?
But no, I don't think there's a problem right now. I think that what you're worried about is what are we going to do this summer, but you haven't started the summer yet. Because I think, Melanie, like you said, he did all of his schoolwork. Yeah, he's going to bed late. So are my children. I think most are because they don't have the same schedule. I think you're like, I don't know what the summer's going to look like. I want this organized, but it hasn't begun yet. And that I'm, you know, with what Todd said about having some expectations around the game, that's fine. You know, you can always have expectations about, or even that every night it shuts off at midnight. That's just what is going to happen. And then he builds and works around that. But I think it's very similar to Joe's son, is that the more we're trying to control a situation, the more they're going to push away. And you don't have to worry about next week yet because you're not there. And because you said now that he doesn't have a structure, we're worried he's not going to have sleep. And, but that hasn't happened yet. And
she's
that,
a little ahead.
Well, and the other part is, as you said, sometimes he needs to help me. So he is going to have a structure and an expectation, and he will learn as this is, you know, in real time, that if he hasn't gotten enough sleep, it's hard to help. And he's going to have to deal with that.
And it might get messy.
Yeah. And I guess my point is that we could give you all sorts of pointers of like, you know, set this boundary or do this. But I think that it's, while those things are important, it's also about like going with it day by day. There isn't like a plan that will, there isn't a plan that will not, he's going to push back on things because that's what they do. And you meet them where they are. You find a new plan. You restructure. One night he stays up too late. The next day he's got to take care of his siblings. That's hard. He learns from that. Mm. Like, I think sometimes we're trying to avoid that by saying, we're going to set a bedtime. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And then none of that will happen. And I think that that kind of rigidity is what our kids push back on. And then we have more of a problem because of that rigidity. And again, it's a blending of both. I'm not saying back off and let them do anything. What Todd said is true. And what you're already doing is great. Here's the expectation, but you haven't started the summer yet. And nobody knows, like you said, we've all kind of got blank slates. So who knows how he will be this summer? I think, well,
just so you know, he's still asleep.
That's fine. I mean, and maybe, and here's the thing, what I know that you'll get lots of different advice and people will say he shouldn't do that because then he'll get in a bad pattern. And then he'll, I know that, but all that's like very fear-based, you know, like this is a problem because my daughters, sometimes they wake up at 8. Sometimes they wake up at noon. Sometimes they wake up at, and my lack of role in that, unless I have to have a role in it, meaning we're leaving at 9, you have to be up. Like sometimes there's reasons,
right,
that they have to be up, and then that makes sense. But if we're just waking them up for the hell of it, because we want to demonstrate that life's hard or that, do you see what I mean? Like he's asleep right now. And the question is that a problem? Like, is that he finished school yesterday? Maybe the ritual today is he gets to
sleep. Which is fine. Yeah. Today.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's hardest for me is when he wakes up so late, his meal times are off and I'm trying, what I would like is to have, at least for all of us, to have dinner together. And it's totally thrown off. He'll eat lunch at 5:30 and then not be hungry for dinner at 6:30. And that's been an issue. And,
well, that can be your expectation right there, is say, I'm going to lay off as far as like when you're going to bed and you're having your own experience of learning your own biorhythms, but we have dinner at 5:30. So plan accordingly. Like that's a boundary right there, is instead of, you know, or we have dinner at 6 or whatever. So please plan accordingly. And sometimes he may show up and be like, oh, I had a snack at 3. That happens with our kids a lot.
And it bothers me and it's okay.
Yeah. You can be like, eh, I made dinner, but really what you want is his presence at the table, right? It's not that he needs to have the same amount of empty stomach as everybody around. That's us controlling. It's the expectation is the day is pretty much your own. In as far as, you know, here's what we expect of you in the house, of what you need to get done or do. And, you know, you guys are going to kind of figure this out as you go. But one thing I know for sure today is we have dinner together at 6. So please keep that in mind. And that is, if he sits there and doesn't eat a lot, you can't control that, but he's there. You just want him there. So, yeah.
So we started a little late and okay. I know Anita has something. So okay. Melanie, hopefully you could take a few nuggets from what we just said and it helps a little bit.
And yeah. And go and it will be different every day, Melanie. Like I know we're not giving a overreaching plan, but that's kind of on purpose. It's like just confront today or this week and then see how things lay out. Hmm.
All right. We're going to head over to Anita.
Where's Anita? I don't see her.
She's right there. Hi, Anita.
Hi, Anita.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm good. I can completely relate to all of that, everything that everyone's talking about with my girls, too. But my situation or my struggle, I guess, is something not necessarily parenting related. It's really different, but I'm struggling with veganism. Mm-hmm. So I've been vegan for over 2 years, and you know, just with what I know, I listen to tons of podcasts and information and just, you know, plant-based diets and the health and the environmental implications and personal health and choices and of course animal rights and all that. So I just struggle with, well, of course, in my own family, I have one daughter who's vegetarian, the other one who's on and off, and my husband who mostly eats what I make, but, you know, says, like, where's the chicken? Please bring back the, you know, the beef burgers. I got to go buy them. And again, like in just society in general, all around me. So I feel like it is a minority. We are a minority. And I know that you guys talked about this a little while back in some of your older podcasts. You had a vegan relative, somebody that was there. And anyway, so I think that it's becoming something that's more understood, more accepted. You know, you got so many options in grocery stores and things like that, dairy-free and all that. But again, I just struggle with it because it hits me on such a emotional level. Like it's deep seated in terms of seeing the world and what we've done, what we've created, the virus, and it's all about animal agriculture. You know, yeah. It's what we've been doing. So I'm trying to just be okay with it, but not, and I can't talk to people about it because it's annoying. They don't want to hear it, you know? So I just do what I can for myself, but it's something that's very, I think it's very deep, very serious. And it does have an implication on my children, on my inner family, but at the world at large. And when I start seeing people again and going to barbecues, it's hard to, I bring my own food and I do that kind of stuff, but I don't know. Anyway, that's just what I'm struggling with. It's been a while. I mean, it's ongoing, but with the lockdown and the all the impact of what we're living through, I see such a direct correlation. And I don't know. I don't want to be judgmental. I kind of wish people would see it, wake up to it, but you can't force that. So anyway, that's just my little, I don't know what your take is on that.
Great, Anita, thank you for bringing that up because you're not alone. I hear this from, I don't want to say a lot of people, but there's a few people in my life who I hear this from a lot. So and your depth of emotion about it, I can relate to also because it seems so, especially in your body, so obvious and such, like you said, such a straight line that it's hard to watch people not be affected by, or obviously they're being affected, to not have the same understanding you do. You know, while you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, we've talked about on Team Zen a lot, Rob Bell's podcast, when he talks about that we all evolve at different times and that they're what you're watching at barbecues or when you're even dealing with it with your own family is we're all evolving at different times, at different paces and under different measures. Meaning that some of us evolve through our food choices, you know, veganism, understanding animal cruelty, and that's how we see the world as a whole. Some of us evolve through just self-awareness and how we are experiencing the world. And it's the thing that's hard, and I think this is what you're experiencing, Anita, is waking up is painful, you know? Think it's so painful, and that was part of, you know, as I've shared a lot, you know, the self-awareness journey, when people are like, ooh, I want to go on the self-awareness journey. I'm like, you have to be really thoughtful because it hurts. It's not fun and games. It's not reading a book and feeling like you're special. It is seeing the big picture of how we harm each other, ourselves, animals, the planet. And you're just like, you're at the heart of it. You know, like you literally, your heart's feeling it. You're living it, and you are just the way you explained it. You already know you can't talk anybody else into it because it's a feeling. It's not, words can help. The movies help. You know, a lot of the documentaries, you know, that it gives people perspective. But the part that's hardest is that you're just living the example through your role modeling, and that you obviously be self-compassionate and that it does hurt. And there's a reason why it hurts. You don't need to get over it. You know, it hurts, but it also your children, your spouse, your friends, people at the barbecue, they're not there yet. And it may not be their way of evolving. That may not be their door in.
A few things. One, Anita, is I just want to create some space for you to just kind of be sad and, you know, and you're doing that quite well. I can kind of hear the tears coming out. So bless you for just like giving yourself some some opportunities to be sad. Yeah. It's funny. I got a text from one of my good friends who's a vegan. I'm a pescatarian myself. And he said, and he never preaches. He's not a preacher, but today he sent a whole group of us other guys a New York Times article that he read today called "The End of Meat is Here." And I haven't read it yet. I plan to.
We'll send it. We'll put it in the notes, Anita, so you can have it.
And yeah, the subtitles, if you care about the working poor, about racial justice, and about climate change, you have to stop eating animals. I'm not here to tell anybody to stop or not stop eating animals. But I would say, I don't want you, Anita, to get small and not speak your truth. But at the same time, the other balance is you want everybody to be different, which is not true either. So it's almost like you have to kind of figure out your relationship with your judgments. I have judgments. Kathy has judgments. We all have judgment, whether it be about people who eat animals or about, you know, people who make too much money or the poor who doesn't work hard enough. Like, our brains are designed to judge one another. It's not something that I'm happy about. That's just the way that we have evolved as human beings. So I don't know. I kind of feel like there's some exploration opportunities for you to kind of, as it is for the rest of us, just to kind of look at the judgment, because it's normal. And I don't want you to get too small and not speak your truth, but I also don't want you to think that you're going to be able to change anybody, because you can't. You, if you're lucky, once again, maybe you have some influence and sharing an article with a group of friends or on Team Zen or something like that.
And making sure you have belonged to a community. You know, there might be like, I'm not a vegan, I'm a vegetarian, mm-hmm. but there, I have, you know, similar heart place, you know, I'm moving along the ladder. I'll just say that. And I think I heard a podcaster say, it's this coach that I listen to sometimes. And she was talking about unconditional love the other day, and she gave a really great description. And she said, unconditional love isn't where we just let anybody say and do whatever they want and we love them and just say, oh, you can walk all over me. She said, unconditional love is we share who we are and how we feel, and we love people no matter what they feel. Does that, so it's like, it's kind of like living in integrity. Like, yeah. Like Todd said, you're going to share what you think, and you don't need to get small or feel bad or feel like it's all on your shoulders. And other people are going to say, I disagree. And if they are people you love, you still love them, but you're not going to stop speaking yeah. your truth. It's that in between.
So I have one resource for you. I just did a search on YouTube. I don't know if you were on Team Zen long enough to, we did some
she was
things here. On Byron Katie's The Work. And
yes.
I just did a YouTube search, and it's an hour and a half video of Byron Katie working with somebody who I think, although I haven't seen it, and the title of it is "The Meat Industry is Violent." So I'm guessing some of the energy that Byron Katie is working with is similar to the energy that you're coming from as well. Because the work as taught by Byron Katie is such a valuable tool when we want the world to be different. And Byron Katie's, her God, her religion is reality. And the reality is right now we live in a country where the meat industry is
big business.
Is big business. And how do we reacquaint our relationship with the reality that is? So I will put that in the show notes so you can look at it. I haven't read it yet. I haven't watched it, but I have a feeling it might just be a reframe for you, because you know, this is just, you're being a human being. You're
feeling it.
You're feeling it. You have these beliefs in the way people ought to eat, and they're your beliefs, and they're not right or wrong. They're your beliefs. And we all have these beliefs. Some people out there be like, no, we should be eating more meat because that's the protein and we need that to survive and so on and so forth. They're not wrong. That's their truth. We all have different versions of our truth. So
thank you guys. Thank you.
Before we close out.
No, that's great. That's great. It's just support. I needed to let that out because, you know, tension at home. So yes. this is a good outlet for just speaking it out, and I kind of feel a bit calmer and a little bit better. So thank you.
Well, it's funny. Joe, who shared some thoughts earlier, he says, thanks for being vulnerable and kudos to you for being mindful and doing your part to lessen the suffering of life. I'm mostly vegetarian, strictly for 15 years. Remember, there's a huge community of people out there at different levels of thought and action out there. After years of being talked down to, one of the most important things I've learned is that I'm doing it because it feels best for me and my role in the world. That's what matters most.
I know. It's interesting. Like, I've been a vegetarian a long time. I've never liked meat since the day I was born. And the questions are always like, but why are you? Why are you? And I don't really have an answer. I don't like it. Like, I'm not standing on a soapbox saying, and you shouldn't either. It's just a personal experience. And whereas for Todd, his was more of a choice. Like, I like it, but and that's the thing, is we all kind of ease into these things in our own ways. And I also have two daughters who love it.
Yeah.
And that is their path, and one daughter who doesn't. So it's like,
and everybody's different. Yeah. Kathy doesn't like meat. I freaking love steak. I love bacon. I haven't had it in 3.5 years. And you know, my personality is like, I know if I have a strip of bacon, the story I make up is I'm going to go right back to where I was. So I just know myself well enough to know that if I just put my toe in the water, I might be doing things that I don't want to do. So that's how I've chosen to do it. But yeah, Bill, I think the idea of community is really strong. And you know, it's funny, like the story that I make.
Yeah, that's important. I think that's important. That's something I probably don't have enough. Like to reach out and find groups and other people that really know anybody else that is. So,
Anita, like Facebook,
reach out.
Pages. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the last piece for me is I feel like you're creating a recipe just to suffer. And I'm saying this with love. People are not going to change because of anything, no matter how much you suffer. It's not going to change their behaviors. So I feel like we all need to fall in love with what is. And what is right now is most people eat meat in our country.
I think all you need to focus on is yourself. This is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. If the door is open to share, I do. I have a community that supports me. And I also don't expect everybody to be evolving at the same time I am. So you just do, you be in your integrity. Yeah. And that goes a long way.
Any last thoughts, Anita, before we close shop?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Anita.
Well, thanks for modeling what I hope that this community is, which is creating space for us to kind of connect with one another, to feel our feels, to get advice, to support one another. So Anita, Melanie, Joe all modeled that beautifully for us today. So thank you.
And people who send in the questions, we appreciate it. And again, you know, in closing, you know, some of you are finishing up the school year or getting close to finishing up. Remember to set some kind of, you know, you don't have to call it a ritual, but at least acknowledge the passage of time. Do something to at least, you know, point out and be clear about that this is a big deal, that we're moving into another phase. We're moving into the summer, and it's uncertain for all of us, just like March, April, and May have been uncertain, but we've gotten through it. And that's always, now we have this like experience of like, okay, we didn't know how we were going to do that, and we did it. And now we're going to have another uncertain thing, but we're going to do it. So we'll do it together. And thank you for being with us today. And you guys have a good weekend.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Adios. Keep trucking. Sweetie, will you stay here just so we can, if I do choose to use this, we can record the intro right now. Actually, we can do it right now. They're muted, so it doesn't matter. We're just going to, I don't want to change files. It's all
going to be on the same file. I just didn't understand what you were doing.
So, hey, everybody, this is Todd.
This is Kathy.
We just recorded a Zen talk, and we decided that we're going to use it as this week's podcast. So we talked about veganism. We talked about a 13-year-old who is gaming too much and a 7-year-old boy who
feels angry.
So it's just kind of a taste of what Team Zen is all about. So we thought that you guys might dig hearing about it in the podcast. So do you have any other parting thoughts? Enjoy.